Hi Dominique, welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Fine, Andrew. Thank you. How are you? No
Good.
palm trees today.
No, sorry. I like your cool new glasses.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, let's kind of dive right in. Obviously, during Trump presidency, every week is interesting, but this lot going on this week, as always. So what are your kind of big takeaways? Certainly from Powell, from the Fed in general. We had a bunch of data out this week. Yeah, what are your thoughts?
So let's start with the data. Now we have much better visibility on Q1 and it's weaker than we thought initially. Consumption, which is basically the US economy, revised down to 0.5% from 1.2%, which was already weak in the first GDP estimate. Today we got weak income growth. And what's interesting is that the slowdown in income and consumption started before Liberation Day. So it's not all policy chaos. And I think what's been going on is that we had a big drop in undocumented immigration in the fourth quarter of last year, even more after the election. And so the growth in labor supply has slowed, and it means we have slower potential growth in the economy, but a slower growth in demand. And that's why we are also seeing slower growth in employment, but a stable, I would say a wobbly to stable unemployment. I think it's about to go up. We can talk about that. But
Unemployment.
so far, it's held out, and it's because immigration lowers both the supply side and the demand side of the economy. So there was that. There was the claims that continue to go up. I mean, as you know, I have this claims-based recession indicator, still far from triggering the recession signal, but definitely moving in the right direction. On current trends, the recession signal would be triggered sometime in early Q4. And then the PC. And okay, there was a little surprise on core PC. It was 0.2 instead of 0.1 month-on-month consensus. From an economist perspective, it's not a big deal. To put things in perspective, if you look at market-based PCE, so it's a PCE that exclude inputted prices, so prices that are not directly observable and that the BEA guesses based on a formula. So, for instance, asset management cost. So, if you look at this indicator, it's actually year on year, it's 2.3%. So it's and Powell has discussed this before. He thinks it's a better indicator of trend than core PCE. So we're only 30 basis points above the
This is
target.
not core PC. This is actually just the full
It's
PC. Yeah, PC.
market based, meaning only the prices that are directly observable. Like I think insurance prices are also based on a formula. So you have fund management, all those stuff, which goes up and down, not based on market necessarily on market pressures. So I would argue that we're still on a trend of stable inflation, slightly, I mean, I would say mild disinflation. One thing which is really interesting in the data is actually it's clearer with PCs and CPI. You can see a continued uptrend in goods inflation. It's not getting worse, so we're not seeing much tariff. Excuse me, impact, but it's been going on since for the past 18 months, basically. And this suggests there are longer term trends driving up goods prices. And I think we could see them even before the pandemic. I'm thinking about, the world had run out of cheap and efficient places like China. So there are not many places where you could go and relocate and lower your cost. Chips prices, you know, Moore's law, that the productivity doubles, what, every 6 months. It's
Yeah.
been that stopped applying since mid 2010. Climate change is a negative supply shock, which all of this suggests that.
Plus, we have potentially tariffs as well. And
Yeah,
trade.
but I'm more and more
You
thinking
say
that
not even including that, yeah. Or
we
no.
are all obsessing about tariff, but they may not be the main story
Right.
here. That we may have underlying trends which will make it very difficult for the Fed to implement their disinflation strategy, which is, you know, rents, housing costs are going to remain above target because we have a shortage, but that will be offset by a goods price deflation, which is what we had
Right.
pre-pandemic.
But
And that's
I guess more the on goods prices, if a decent amount of goods that would normally come from China have been diverted,
Yeah, so that brings us to the
and
Fed.
like that's there's a theory that that's what's causing disinflation in Europe is because floods of goods from Asia.
Yeah, but maybe for the European. But if you look at goods prices in America, they've been on very steady uptrend for 18 months. So I don't know what the Europeans are doing. God knows how they manage their economies. But we in America, you know, I think we are obsessing about this tariff, but they may not be the main story
Right.
as
There's
far
an
as
underlying
the
trend
economy.
that's there, irrespective.
And so the strategy of we're going to go back to the target with housing inflation above 2% because it will be offset by goods price deflation, which has been the Fed's long-term strategy. It's not going to work based on what we are seeing. But anyway, this brings us to the Fed. We've had 11 speakers since the FOMC, and except for two, they all followed their leader and argued that they could not cut in July because there is a lot of uncertainty. They think that the tariff impact is still to come, and that they need to rest over the summer to see how bad it's going to get. Personally, I don't buy it because I look at disinflation, stable to mild disinflation, very stable price data, weakening of
This
the
is more outside of goods inflation that you were saying that has been happening.
no, good inflation is fine. I mean, come
Yeah.
on, market based core PC is 30 basis points above target. Are
Yeah.
you going to crash the US economy to lower inflation by 30 basis points? No, that's not what the Fed is doing. And I don't think inflation should be a big concern. I think they need to focus more on the demand side of the economy because we're seeing weaker growth than we expected. And we're seeing a very steady uptrend in continuing jobless claim.
Right.
So not enough for me to climb on my soapbox and shout recession is coming, but enough to, I think, you know, from a risk management perspective, perhaps, you know, ease next month simply to balance the risk of recession with the risk of inflation. Because in my view, the data shows clearly that the balance of risk is now more on the employment side of the Fed mandate. But I'm not the Fed, and
Right.
clearly they've
And the
decided.
market right now is listening to Powell and assuming July's, well, I guess a small chance says 18% currently. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so Powell, I think, gave out the plot when during his testimony to the House and the Senate. In the Senate, especially, he said inflation has been above target for a number of years, and so we have to be more careful about our decision. So he's worried that if the Fed cuts and inflation goes up, the Fed will lose credibility. So in other words, because we have this backdrop of inflation above target for a number of years, the cost of a policy mistake in terms of the loss of Fed credibility, it's higher than pre-pandemic when we had had 30 years of very low
Fine.
inflation.
Fine. So again, as you always like to say, which I think is great to reiterate, is your view is not what they should do, it's what looks like they're going to do.
Yeah,
Right. And
100%.
they should probably be cutting, but in reality, all the signs outside of kind of maybe two of them looks like they're certainly waiting beyond July.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that either of the two will dissent in July. It won't make a difference to the outcome, but it will be interesting because the FOMC has a very consensus-based way of working, and it will be interesting if this is changing. But you were talking about markets. It's a good point to segue and talk about the amazing US equity market and the decoupling, which Antonio has been highlighting, the decoupling of the market from economic activity. It's astounding. We're close to the high, despite everything that has happened. So my theory, to put this on this, is that the people who are being hurt by, say, higher goods prices, because we're seeing a little bit of higher goods prices, or not being able to find job easily, are not the people who own stock. That stock ownership in the US is extremely concentrated, and in something like 70% is owned by 10% of a household. And that's how I explain the disconnect. And of course, being an economist, I'm going to argue that eventually market has to follow the economy rather than the other way around, in the sense that if growth continues to slow, earnings are going to slow. I mean, if you look at the share of profit, of corporate profit, in national income, it's the highest since it's been since World War II. So there is very little scope for increasing margin, especially with the economy slowing. So if we continue to see this slowdown, earnings will slow, and it doesn't look like the Fed will come to the rescue anytime soon. So we could have a continued disconnect between equities and the real economy. But being an economist, I'm going to argue my case that eventually the market has to fall to the law of economic gravity. And
Well, I think so one thing that could be happening is I think despite the markets rallying a lot, the breadth in the market has not been great. So again, it's a lot of that is the big tech stocks and the I think like the Russell's been underperforming. So I think there's some of that. So that AI, all the spend, winner take all in a bunch of these different industries is kind of there's a little bit of, I think there's a little bit of that going on apparently because I saw something about talking about breath and stuff that
100% because
by the way, I actually am in this, I think this liquidity kind of risk taking probably will continue at this point. It's
for sure.
Coming back from this balance and I personally kind of think that we'll continue to see higher there, but
No, I agree, but 2 points. First of all, on the Russell, the size of the constituent, so these are much smaller constituent, and in terms of coping with the tariff and the disruption, it's much more difficult for smaller firms and bigger firms. So the Russell tends to move closer to the economy. And in terms of the rally continuing, for sure, I'm thinking in terms of economic times. I mean, Viresh this morning had some charts showing that EPS forecasts, I think, for this quarter are falling, but then, increasing the perennial equity analyst optimism. But I mean, to me, this suggests that if we are really on a downward tra on a trajectory, economic trajectories that will remain downward, it's going to take some time to register for people. So we could very well have a good summer rally, definitely.
And then into mid late August, things start getting messy again, and the data may really roll over then, potentially. And the market may get frustrated, maybe, that again, like if it doesn't look like the Fed's signaling September as well. Okay, so then going forward, what are the for next week? What are you thinking?
So NFP, NF, so first of all, next week we have July 4th. So NFPs are on Thursday. The consensus is predicting a further decline in NFP. And a 10 basis point increase in unemployment. It all seems reasonable given the pace of the slowdown. I don't think it will move the needle for the Fed. They are quite set on staying on hold. So that seems reasonable to me and not the sort of things that would sort of economic news that would stand in the way of a further market rally.
Why would you not think if immigration is slowed significantly, the labor market is not doing great, if I can paraphrase. So why wouldn't the employment numbers look weak on Friday?
So, I mean, you're absolutely right. Unemployment number looking, I mean, basically falling to 120,000 from 140 last month. It's a marked slowdown. And remember,
Why isn't it closer to zero or something?
last year I predicted that because of lower immigration, we would go to sub 100. 1,000 NFP. So as usual, I was a bit too early. But no, that's definitely part of what is happening. And so far, the unemployment rate has been stable, wobbly stable. If you dig, you look at the detail, it's actually the unemployment market is really softening, but it's been stable. And that's because you've had because it's been the main driver until recently has been lower immigration, so a decline in both demand and supply.
Right, but shouldn't that the actual payroll numbers be lower? I guess so. You don't see something like 50,000 or something.
No, 50,000 would be really a freakish number. No, I mean something moderately lower. And it won't freak out the market and it won't push the Fed to cut in July.
Okay, anything else? Any other numbers? Yeah, I guess you're right. It's a shortened week, so.
Yeah, no, I mean the jolts, but I'm not much jolted by the jolt. What a terrible joke. No, it's, I mean, and of course we will have
It's slowly soft, continuing to soften, right? The trend has been in place for a while,
And we will have the PMI, the manufacturing PMI, which is more a trading event than an economic event because it's quite decoupled from GDP. But that's, we have, in terms of trading, we have our event monitor with some really cool features to look at, what kind of volatility could come from a surprise. So, yeah. That's Tuesday, the PMI.
Okay, great. Yeah, nothing else. I think, obviously wish you a nice weekend. Wish kind of all our clients a lovely weekend. Obviously all the best in the markets, and to reach out to us. for any questions and feedback. And as Dominique was mentioning, I think a lot of people have been asking or seen, the work we're doing around the event monitor, all those improvements, and now also the central bank dashboard that we'll be releasing in the next few weeks, which we've gotten some great feedback on. So if you haven't seen those things, please reach out to us, and all the
Yeah, good luck, everybody.
best. Thanks.